Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
10 years ago this week, Michael Waltrip won the Daytona 500, the race in which legendary driver Dale Earnhardt died. Waltrip was driving for Earnhardt's team. Before winning that race, Waltrip had driven in 462 NASCAR events without finishing first. Waltrip's win and Earnhardt's death are at the center of In the Blink of an Eye, subtitled Dale, Daytona, and the Day That Changed Everything, which Michael Waltrip recently wrote with the assistance of Ellis Hennekin. When I had the opportunity to speak this week with Michael Waltrip, who, incidentally, on Thursday posted the 8th fastest qualifying time for tomorrow's Daytona 500, I began our conversation by asking about his background. Since he comes from an auto racing family, I wondered if his career choice had seemed to him inevitable.
Oh, certainly. From the time I've been on this earth, my brother Daryl was off racing a car. He was 16 years old when I was born, so I grew up chasing him around. Mom and Dad would throw me in the back of the family car, and we would be off to the races. And it just was how I grew up, and it's all I really ever thought of. I did feel like maybe that I was a little naive as a 10 or 12 year old kid telling everybody I was going to be a race car driver, because I noticed there weren't too many of those around town. But I wanted to be like my brother, and that was my whole focus as a kid.
What do you think the response of your family members would have been if you'd said at 12, "I want to be a doctor"?
They would have said, "You're going to probably need to do better at school." And I wanted to be a weatherman, too. That was my other career opportunity. And then somebody clued me in that you had to go to college for that as well. Mm-hmm. So I just really was focused on racing. And darn, you know, the chances of making it to this level and winning the Daytona 500, you know, are probably – my brother told me when I was a kid that the chances of that were 1 in 1,000,000. And I thought for a minute, and then from a movie I've heard before, I said, "So you're saying I got a shot?" And off to the races I went.
You credit Dale Earnhardt with giving you the opportunity to succeed as a driver. You had run an awful lot of races without winning. What do you suppose he saw in you?
Well, we were buddies, and, you know, he knew how passionate I was about racing. And you know, the 0 for 462 thing, it was bad. No one will probably ever lose that many races again without winning one, because they won't get the chance. But I knew I could win. I'd outrun Dale on occasions. Heck, I'd outrun everybody on occasions. I just couldn't outrun them all on the same day. He believed in his heart that if I ever got to drive a car for him, I would win. And that was sort of his motivation for picking me to drive his car.
Some observers have said that at that Daytona 500 10 years ago, Dale Earnhardt was blocking for you. For our listeners who may not be familiar with auto racing tactics and terms, what does blocking mean?
Well, at Daytona, you race in a pack. The cars are tied together aerodynamically because of the slipstream, the draft that comes off the vehicle you're following. On those types of tracks, you really need people to push you and to work with you. Dale and I talked on the Friday morning prior to that 500 in 2001. Me, him, and Dale Jr. were going to be that team. We were going to be the three that tied it all together. And so as the laps wound down, the last 20 laps, I had put myself in the first position. Dale Earnhardt Jr. was second. And Dale was third. One thing that writing the book did for me is it made me realize how hard he worked blocking for those last 20 laps. But then when he crashed his car, he wasn't blocking anymore for us. Anybody that knows restrictor plate racing could look at the picture, look at the scenario, and know that there was no way that anyone was going to pass me and Dale Jr. We had too big of a lead. We were already home free. He was just blocking and fighting for that third spot. He wanted a 1-2-3 finish is one theory, maybe. And another is he thought maybe if he got in front of Sterling Marlin, who had a really fast car, he could drive up there and pass us both and make it be a 1-2-3 finish, but him being in front. So I was thankful that I went to the effort of writing the book, because there was a lot of stuff that I had just decided to block out and try to forget, and that's not a great strategy in life. You should probably face things that hurt, and I was able to do that throughout the writing of the book, and people really are seeming to enjoy the story, and I certainly enjoyed how I came out the other side of writing it.
on that day 10 years ago, you knew as soon as you crossed the finish line and took the checkered flag that you had won one of the sport's most prestigious races. How did you learn that Dale Earnhardt had crashed and that he hadn't survived that accident?
Well, when I took the checkered flag, I thought everything in the whole world was perfect. It just was the perfect place for me to be on what I thought was the perfect day. And then my buddy Kenny Schrader, who is a fellow race car driver, was actually in the accident with Dale. And when the cars came to a stop, Kenny went to check on Dale. And Kenny tells a story really, really well. He said, I went over there and he said, I knew Dale was going to be mad because he had wrecked on the last lap and he wasn't going to be happy. But, you know, I thought we would just laugh about the fact that we had crashed and that his team just won the Daytona 500. And when Kenny got there, Dale was hurt bad. And so Kenny came to Victory Lane probably a half hour after the conclusion of the race, as soon as he could get there, to tell me what had happened. And he just said, Mike, it's not good. Dale's hurt. I think Dale's hurt really bad.
According to the account in the blink of an eye, you were not prepared to go on and race the following week. No surprise there. And yet you did go on and race. Isn't competing when you're not prepared to do it, either physically or psychologically, potentially dangerous to you and to the other drivers on the track?
Well, you know, you can certainly be on your game, as they say, or you can just sort of be there and be a guy that's just there to go race. And, you know, maybe you try to convince yourself you're ready, and you start an engine that has 800 horsepower under the hood. You begin to say, okay, I got this. But in all honesty, you have to be mentally perfect to win one of these darn things. It's just such a tough series and such a competitive group of guys you're racing against. So while it wasn't ideal, it was just what my job was, and I did it that way for a few months. I just, you know, I thought I was in the game, but I really wasn't. Mm.
You attended Dale Earnhardt's funeral service, as did many, many more people. I've read that a lot of race drivers don't attend services for their fellow drivers who've died in crashes. Is that incorrect?
I've tried to make all the ones that unfortunately passed while I was racing. And, you know, back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, especially the late 90s, it just seemed to be happening repeatedly. But Dale didn't like funerals. My dad passed away in 2000, and the morning that Dad died, Dale came to my house to say hi to my mom and tell her that he was thinking about her and the family. You know, he didn't like to go to funerals. So to each his own. I feel like that for me, it's a way to show the family that I'm there for them. Mm-hmm. But Dale had a different philosophy, and him coming to my house to see my mama was one of the sweetest things anybody could have ever done.
In the book, you refer often to your faith. How did it help you to come to terms with Dale Earnhardt's death at Daytona?
Well, there's only one way to justify what happened, and that is, you know, I'm a Christian, and I believe that our days on earth are numbered, and I believe that when you die, you go to heaven. That's my faith. And if I didn't believe that, how could you explain why that all went down like that? You know, what could have possibly been the someone's reason for something being that cruel and that sad? So that's just how I deal with it. I've always dealt with it like that, but there's been times when I've certainly asked why. You know, why did it have to be that way, and why did I win our greatest race, and yet I don't even want to be associated with it? But I'll go to heaven one day, and I bet you I find out.
As you point out in the book, at Daytona 10 years ago, Dale Earnhardt became the fourth driver to die in a crash in less than a year. Is auto racing safer now than it was 10 years ago?
Oh, the interesting thing about 10 years ago in auto racing safety is it was, we can talk about it as back in the day. We are so much more prepared to hit things now than we were back then. But, you know, we were just learning about safety back in the late 90s and early 2000s. We were just trying to figure out what was going wrong. We had always thought we were racing the safest cars in the whole world, and yet people were beginning to get hurt. Since 2002, we've implemented the head and neck restraint device. We've put up safer barriers around the racetrack. NASCAR opened an R&D facility just outside of Charlotte where they study every crash and every car that's been crashed to see how they can make the cars safer. They've installed crash data boxes inside the car to see what kind of G-forces the cars are generating when they hit the wall. So tons of things have happened over the last 10 years to make us safer inside the cars, and for that I'm thankful.
You spoke about what writing the book accomplished for you. Is there any significance to the fact that you've waited 10 years to tell the story of the 2001 Daytona 500?
Well, I'm not that bright, but I was able to figure out after the ninth anniversary of Dale's death that the 10th was going to be up next, and that a lot of people were going to want to ask me about that day. And so for the first time, my sister Connie recorded all the races for me, and I knew where the DVD was for that race, but I just never put it in. And one night I plugged in, it was Fox Sports' first event covering NASCAR, and all 4 hours of it I just sat there and watched it, and I figured out, you know, obviously that Dale, the last thing he knew on earth is there we were going to win. Plus the media that week, Dale had told two or three different people that he was the happiest he'd ever been in his whole life. He was just really content with who he was and where he was. That's a great place to be too. That brought some comfort and relief to me as well. And then the subtle reminders that I heard him, it brought back memories of how he was telling the media. He would say, "You better watch Michael. He's going to be tough this weekend. You better watch Michael." And so those messages were to me, not to the media. He just wanted to make sure that I heard them. So there was a lot of things that made me laugh and smile and made me feel more comfortable with talking about that day. Now, through the process of doing it, Ellis and I yelled I yelled at Ellis a lot, because I would tell something that was really emotionally challenging for me to tell him. And when I'd get done, he said, "Now tell me that again." And I said, "Ellis, I will hit you. I'm bigger than you are." And so, you know, we had a few moments, a few reality show moments in the writing of the book, but he's the first person. I didn't know him from anything, and he's the first person that I brought up all the details and all the feelings I had about that race that day to. And so he became not only a writer, but a bit of a doctor for me as well.
Michael Waltrip, the winning driver at the Daytona 500 10 years ago, now co-owns the Michael Waltrip Racing Team, and he will be one of that team's drivers this weekend at Daytona. With Ellis Hennekin, he wrote In the Blink of an Eye. Michael, thank you very much for speaking with me.
I appreciate being on. Thank you.
My conversation with Michael Waltrip, who will be driving tomorrow at Daytona for the Toyota team he co-owns, will be featured on this week's program. Since it's almost Oscars time, I'll also have a story about the man whose knockouts and knockdowns inspired The Fighter, which is up for half a dozen Academy Awards. That would be boxer Mickey Ward. Sports Illustrated soccer writer Grant Wall will join me to explain why he, and not the incumbent Sepp Blatter, should be FIFA's president. Tim Kirkjian will be checking in with us from spring training in Arizona, and we'll find out what challenge next awaits Watson, the computer that humiliated a couple of humans on Jeopardy this week. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.